When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to episode 82 of Tendy Talk, presented by the Hockey Podcast Network and the BLPA Podcast Networks. I'm your host, Joe, better known as Wash Up Goalie on social media. Last week, I talked with Brandon Bassett, the NYPD goalie from the FDNY-NYPD rivalry game from this last spring. This week, I talk with Nick Battaglia, the FDNY goalie from that same game, to get his side of the story. So, without further ado, let's get to the conversation with Nick. So, Nick, thanks for joining me on the podcast. It's good to have the other half of the latest NYPD FDNY rivalry series game on the podcast.
Absolutely, it's cool to be here.
Yeah. So you know, before
I was listening to your podcast with Bassett, and really interesting to hear what he had to say as well.
Yeah, you know, it was fun with the game in September. I was able to get Mike and Kurt on to get, you know, both sides of the game. It was kind of neat. And then when I saw both of them stepped away from the teams and we had fresh blood between the pipes, I was like, well, geez, I got to get these two guys on too now.
There you go. Easy content.
Yeah, exactly. And it's always good to get, you know, first responders on. You know, I think most people have respect for the jobs, you know, both you and Brandon do. But it's always fun to get you guys on and hear your side of the story, too.
Yeah, absolutely. That game was unlike any other game I've ever played. So,
yeah. Now, before we get into that game, you know, how did you get started in firefighting? Is it, you know, the old family job, or, you know, was it an opportunity? How did you get going in it?
Actually, a weird thing. My dad was PD.
Oh, okay.
And he told me, he's like, he signed me up. He said, you're taking the fire department test and you're not taking the cop test. He wanted me to become a fireman and not a cop.
Why didn't he want you to become a cop?
I think he just, you know, was thinking that in this day and age, with the phones and everything, that, you know, you're under a lot more scrutiny as a cop than you are as a fireman. And I think he knew that it would be the better fit for me, which it's a great fit for me. I love it. I love the job.
Yeah. Well, and as we all know, cops always wish they were firemen anyway, right?
Some won't say that, but I think so.
Yeah, you know, it's that fun rivalry.
Hold on, I can't really hear you right now. I got the camera perfect. I can't hear what you're saying. Can't hear you. Can you hear me?
All right, there we go. My microphone
Got you.
went a little wonky there. I had to plug it back in. It was being a little goofy. I was saying I saw a meme not too long ago. It was a cop pulled over on the side of the road. The firemen were changing his tire, and it said, "Even cops need heroes."
Yeah, it's always a fun back and forth with them. Absolutely, especially out there.
Yeah.
And you
So,
always get that picture of the, you know. Go ahead.
your dad kind of pushes you to become a fireman, and as I mentioned, going back and forth in text, my dad spent 30 over 30 years on the job if you include the volunteer stuff before he got on Chicago. So, I know it's a good job, and I know it's a fun job at the same time. I took St. Paul, Minnesota's test, but they only take 30 a year, and I didn't live in the city. I didn't have veteran experience, and I'm not a minority, so I didn't have a shot there. And Chicago's only given two tests when I was old, within the age range, and it wasn't conducive with what we had going on, so it just never happened for me. But have you thought about the job and kind of gone, what the heck did I get myself into? Or are you like most firemen going, I don't work a day because I love what I do?
I think it's definitely the second one because I love going to work and I love hanging out with the guys and whatever call it is, we know we got each other's backs. And also I get to be on, one of the most fun hockey teams I've been on in my life. So
So are you on an engine company or a truck?
I'm in a truck.
Okay.
In a truck.
All right. I would never been able to be on a truck company because of my fear of heights and ladders. I would have had to been an engine guy.
It's all right. They all they're all the same. Everyone knows how to do everything. So, tomorrow I can go to work and they could say you're in the engine. So
Yeah, exactly. So how did you get started playing in the game of hockey? And
I got an extremely late start. Like I always liked hockey. I still think to this day I've played more years of baseball than I have of hockey. I think I started playing ice hockey when I was 12. But I went right into playing goal because when I was a kid, I have an older brother. When I was a kid, and they played hockey on the street, it was, he's 5 years older than me. He said, "If you want to play, you gotta play goalie, or else you can't play." So I was like, "Okay." So then I started playing, goalie. Took my lumps and bruises, and eventually tried to get out there on the ice. And it was definitely a learning curve from being on shoes and the Franklin pads and using a first baseman's mitt.
It's funny because I think I was about 12 when I started playing hockey too. And today people think that's starting late. And especially when it comes to goalie, I think that's almost the perfect time to start because you're not starting when you're little and kind of forming some of these bad habits just because you're not good enough and the shooters just can't do anything. So I almost think to start goalie, 12 is almost that ideal age, if you ask me.
I think it worked out for me too because I was about to go into high school and I think I was about 7th grade. So, all I was doing was playing like the house league that they had at my local rink, and only having one practice and one game a week allowed me to go to private sessions and goalie sessions at this really great mini rink. It's called KB Hockey, and it's like the rink is maybe like 30 by 40. It's a small rink, boards all around, and every workout there, the puck was always coming out in front for rebounds. So it was a really, really good place to train. And I was also old enough where it was, I really want to do this. So I really kind of put my nose to the grindstone for those few years and, put a lot of work into it. And then by the time I got to high school, I was ready to play high school hockey.
So you play in high school. Did you play beyond high school competitively, or was that the end of the road for you?
Well, I played my I just played high school my first 2 years of high school. So going into my junior year, I played on a double A team. But I felt that I can go further. So my senior year, I went and I tried out for a junior B team, and I ended up making the team and ended up being one of the top guys on that team. So now the question is, going into college? Do you want to go play juniors, or do you want to, you know, go to college and play for whatever team, that whatever school you go to? And it was took a little convincing from my mom. My dad was all in for it, but I went to play junior hockey. I decided to go out to Helena, Montana, from New York City to Helena, Montana, and I played 2 years there, and it was the one of the best 2 years of my life so far. It was such a blast playing out there, because we actually had fans, because you know the closest pro team out there is the Avalanche or the Flames.
Yeah. So all the there's not much in Montana.
Had like 2,000 people plus at games, and it really was a blast.
You know, it's funny you mentioned playing junior hockey in Montana. I don't think people realize how many junior teams there are in Montana. And when I was playing college hockey, I played for a small Division III school. I was on the JV for 4 years, but my coach was out in Montana doing a recruiting trip. And he comes back, he goes, I'm out in the middle of Montana, and I have my St. Mary's shirt on. And some kid comes up to me, goes, hey, do you know Joe Drennan? And he goes, I'm in the middle of Montana and somebody knows you. What's going on here? I was like, was his name Brian Coleman by chance? His dad, he was a fireman. And he goes, yeah, it was. I said, you probably ran into the only person in the entire state that knew me. He goes, he couldn't get over the fact that he's out there recruiting and somebody's asking about their third string JV goalie.
No, out there it's a lot of fun, because you get, you know, I played with kids from Alaska, kids from Canada, you know, guys from overseas. It was kind of a big melting pot. I was the only New Yorker, of course, but
yeah,
definitely took my licks for that. Everything going on in New York, they said it's because of me, but.
So you play a little junior hockey, and at some point that comes to an end. So did you wind up going to college and playing there at all, club or anything?
Well, so I played the 2 years in Montana, and then in the middle of my second year in Montana, I flew back home to New York to take the fire department test. And I actually remember missing like 3 days of practice and then going back that weekend and getting pulled in the game. So I was like upset, because that's what I was doing at the time, was playing hockey. And I was upset. Yeah. I was like, oh, I can't believe I missed practice. And then I was all messed up. I got pulled. And then, you know, that next summer, the results come out. And it's like, hey, it looks like you're going to get in the next year or so here. So you have to be 21 to get on, but I believe you have to be 17 and a half or 18 to take the fire department test.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to play my 20 bomb year in Brooklyn for the New York Aviators, which is, you know, right by me here. And I was just going to, you know, the investigation, the medical, all the requirements I had to do to get onto the fire department. But I was also playing junior hockey 6 days a week and trying to commit to a school. So I ended up at the end of the season committing to Becker College, which was a NCAA D3 school. And that was the goal. The goal was to try and play NCAA hockey. And I was going in that September, and it was looking like I was going to the academy in November. So I decided to, you know, stay out of student debt and all that and go right into the fire academy at 21 in November instead.
Nice. It's good planning on your part, that's for sure. So you go to the academy, I'm sure at this point, because dad being a cop, you knew of the hockey teams, you know, were you trying to figure out how do I get on the team right away? Or were you kind of going, let me get started on the job first?
Well, during the academy, you know, I didn't touch the ice. So it was just all the academy. But, you know, hockey's a very tight-knit community, as you know. Everybody knows everybody. So.
Yeah.
You know, I knew a couple of guys that were already on the team, and they knew that I was in the academy, and they said, just get through the academy, and you know, after that, you know, we'll get you down here to skate. But as I graduated the academy, I went in 2019. As I graduated the academy in early 2020, that's when COVID really, really hit hard, where that's when all the quarantine started, you know. So pretty much all we were doing was, you know, skating once a week. There wasn't any tryouts. It was just, I got out in April or March, and they told me, hey, we know, you know, you're looking to come onto the team. Why don't you come down and skate, you know, once a week with us while this is all going on, and we'll go from there. And I went out there and just never stopped skating with them.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure once you get in the academy and they find out you're a goalie, they're going, okay, we need to be nice to this kid and get him out for a few because, New York, you got a few more than other departments, but not many goalies floating around.
It was more the instructors that were from firehouses that have, you know, aspiring hockey teams that play in, like, the Battalion Hockey League and stuff like that, that they, you know, trying to get me, you know, trying to speak to people to see if they can get me. But I ended up exactly where I wanted to end up in terms of being in a firehouse.
That's nice. In fact, a friend of the family, he just graduated the Chicago Fire Academy. And, you know, my dad, the whole time, he's going, all right, where's he going to land? And he found out he was on a tower ladder on the far south side. He's like, all right, you're at a good house now. Just don't mess it up. He's like, yeah, you can stay there and be really happy. Just don't mess it up.
No, yeah, definitely. All the athletes, you know, the baseball players, the guys that, you know, could be on the football team, the baseball team, once they know who you are, you know, obviously you don't get any special treatment. You might get even worse treatment. They try and, you know, get you, try and bust you a little bit more, but they definitely try and get you to their firehouse if they can.
Yeah. Yeah. They want to be able to look over you and make sure if there's a big game coming up that they can pull the strings needed to make sure you're off.
Absolutely. The only thing is that with this game, as you know, I backed up in the game in September and I played in April. There's a rule, so we have this big, you know, ice hockey tournament called King of the Ice, and it's every firehouse pretty much has a team.
Yeah.
It's like 96 teams or whatever on in it. And if you dress in that game, you are not allowed to play with your firehouse. That's one of the rules. So when they found out that I was backing up the first year before I played that year, before I could play with them on King of the Ice, even though it got canceled anyway because of COVID, but they said, you're really not going to give the firehouse a year. You're going to, you know, you're going to go sit on the bench and then you're not, and you're not going to play with us. Are you serious? I got my chops busted for that one. But I think this year after this game, they were, you know, they kind of quieted down about it a little bit.
So your first go with the, you know, the team was the September game, you know, the 20-year anniversary game at Madison Square Garden. What was that like, even being on, you know, on the bench for that game? That there had to be some nerves going there.
I tell you what, I felt really good in warm-ups. I was ready to go, but it was me and Kurt really competed the whole summer. I knew he had the, you know, the time and was most likely gonna play over mm-hmm. me, but you know, we competed the whole summer. And you know, if anything went, you know, awry, I thought I was ready to go. But as the game settled in, I kind of just sat down and enjoyed watching the game. I was just into it as like a guy on the bench. Going into it knowing you're not playing, you really, you know, I really wasn't that nervous.
Yep.
Because, you know, if I go in, things are going bad already. So I can only, you know, they're not, you know, things aren't going to get much worse if they get any worse if I have to come in. But that game was entertaining, especially for the, you know, the guys watching it. A lot of goals in that game.
Yep. Yeah. When I was talking to Mike Nano, Jimmy Becker ran into him in that game and took him out really hard. And Jimmy mm-hmm. and I played college hockey together. So I sent him a message and I asked him, hey, you have any apologies for Mike? And he goes, oh, no, we got it out of the way after the game. But we were picking on Jimmy a little bit when Mike and I were talking. He goes, yeah, the kid can't skate to begin with anyway.
Nah, he's you know, he's a power play guy. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Jimmy's a good kid. Always has a smile on his face when he's on the ice. And like you said, he's a good, smart power play hockey player. And every shift he was out there, he's always giving it his all. So, you know, he's the kind of player you want on the ice.
Yeah, he's got a pretty wicked one-timer. He's always practicing it on me, and the first always happens to be the first few shots I get in practice is him taking one-timers from the top of the table. So,
Some things don't change.
Yeah, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about there.
Yeah, I do. So, you know, you back up Kurt in September, and then it's kind of funny because we say this year's game rolls around, but it was only a few months later because games are typically in the spring. But because of COVID and everything, the 2020 one game was in the fall. So this year's game rolls around. Kurt steps down from the team, and you get thrust into the starter position. How did that feel?
Well, I thought I was, you know, I thought I was ready. It was a weird season because we played all summer. We skated all summer, went everywhere.
Yeah,
which is, you know, uncharacteristic of the team, especially with everything going on this summer with the department. Usually overtime is through the roof, and you know, you're spending a lot of time at the firehouse. It was a big sacrifice to go all summer to play in September. And then if we were playing in April again, you know, we took like two and a half months off as if it was a summer, but it was September 9th till, you know, maybe the end of November. We started getting back out on the ice or middle of November. So yes, October off, a little bit of November. And then we got back into it. But when I came back, there was a few goals. We had five when I got added to the team. And then one guy got hurt. Kurt stepped away, and then another guy completely quit too. So it was me and, you know, one other guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the practices were definitely a little tough with two goalies, you know, I was not getting out of the nets and all. And then, you know, we ended up having to get a guy that was on the team that's played in this game several times, Billy Prang, really, really, really good guy. He came back for, you know, the second half of the season to, you know, give us a little bit of relief in practices But he was all about it. He knew exactly what he was doing. He ended up backing me up in that game, which was good to have the veteran experience behind me there. And I definitely talked to Kurt before that game. He was giving me, you know, some tips and pointers about that game. You know, you drink 2 gallons of water the day before because you're not going to realize how much you're going to sweat in that game. And
yeah, those TV lights are hot.
It's not like your regular hometown rink where you walk in and it's freezing ice cold. It is warm in those buildings for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, as I've talked with Kurt and Mike and Brandon, you know, the rivalry game has a little more pregame ceremonies than most. It's not just playing the national anthem. There's a lot going on the ice, people coming in and out of the locker room. And on top of that, it's the rivalry, you know. You guys, when you're on that ice, you hate the cops. Only when you're on the ice, you hate them. What kind of nerves did you have going into that game, and what did you do to calm them?
Well, I think this I'm not a very superstitious goalie. The only thing I do is I put my left skate on before my right. I'm not that guy that has that routine that if that goes astray, now I'm all in my head. I'm not like that. If you hear me joking around 2 minutes before we go out on the ice and, you know, being loose, that's a good thing. That means I'm just ready to go out there, and I play my best hockey when I'm just out there playing, you know, when I'm not thinking about everything. So the only thing with that is we have a lot of because it's a lot of charity money that, you know, we raise and that game raises. So throughout the time in the locker room, you know, we have the families of, you know, our fallen brothers and sisters coming in, and, you know, we give money to foundations. And we're trying to get ready for the game, and they also come in and take pictures. So it is a little bit hectic before the game, but that is what it's all about. The only thing that was probably the hardest for me was, you know, standing for the national anthem and all the pregame ceremonies, because when, you know how it is when you're standing on your skates like that for a half hour, you know, you gotta shake them out a little bit. So, you know, the warm up was already about an hour ago, and now you just got to get ready to go. But it all worked out in the end. I think by the score, it was pretty good. I was ready to get back in there for another one the next day, if you ask me.
Now, you know, Dad's a cop, and he should cheer for the cops in that game. You know, was he conflicted going to that game? Going, who do I cheer for? Did he want you to do well, but the cops to win, or what?
Not at all. He was wearing his fire department gear, regardless of what he might tell everybody. He was, you know, sitting in my section, rooting for the fire department team. He actually, you know, he's retired now. So every game that I play that's near where he lives, is, you know, he comes. It'll be like 11 o'clock game.
Yeah.
I have a game tonight. There's a chance he might just show up just to watch the game.
Yeah. You know, I hockey parents are like that, not just dads, but hockey parents. And if my dad didn't live halfway across the country, he'd probably come to all my games too. And I think half the reason he'd come to the games is because he knows there's beer in the locker room afterwards. but
absolutely,
he would come for that reason. And then the other is because the team I'm on is almost all volunteer firemen from where I live. There's, I think, only three of us that aren't on the job. But as some of the guys joke, I grew up going to the firehouse with dad. So, you know, they're going, you've seen more fires than half of us have. So you've got more time on the job than we do. So you fit right in. but yeah, that's awesome that dad comes to the game. So was dad a New York cop or was he in the suburbs?
Yes, he was NYPD. Okay. He was NYPD. He worked in Brooklyn and East New York. And he ended up, when he retired, he was a detective. So.
Okay. So he was probably working 9/11 then.
I was very, very fortunate that my dad was off at home, you know, sleeping in bed when that was going on, because he would have undoubtedly been there. And, you know, I don't know what would have happened from there. So I'm definitely blessed that he was, you know, we grew up in Staten Island. So I was very blessed that he was at home and not there.
Yep. But I'm sure as soon as things started happening, you got ready and you went to work, and the next couple of weeks were crazy.
Absolutely. I have to say, I really don't remember it because I was only two at the time.
You're making me feel old. I was in college.
Yeah, I was only two at the time. So I actually have zero recollection of it that day. I know a lot of people, a lot of friends of mine who lost parents, who lost brothers, who lost sisters, who lost family members. You, even to this day, you feel it. You know, you know, friends that grew up without fathers, grew up without mothers, it's, you know, it changes everything. So
I remember, like I said, I was a junior in college when that happened, and my dad was the head of collapse rescue in Chicago at the time, and so I was just waiting for the phone call. I knew he was going out there, and that evening he called, and it was that double ring, off-campus ring. And usually, because this was pre-cell phones, you know, you'd get your one phone call with mom and dad a week, and it was usually about half hour or so. And I remember the entire phone call, and it was dad. He goes, "I'm headed to New York in the morning." I said, I figured you would. And he goes, "I don't know when or if I'll be home. I love you." And all I could say was, "I love you back." And there was nothing more we could say. Emotions were too raw because we didn't know what was going to happen. You know, they were on the piles digging. You didn't know if there was going to be a collapse or an explosion or what. So it was, I think they were out there 10, 12 days. And it was funny, as dad tells the story, the water department had just gotten a brand new big old truck. So they quick got it to the shops with the fire department lettering and everything on there. And then they filled it up with air bottles, hand tools, anything they could fit in this truck, they threw in there. And they assembled a team, kind of, you could almost call it a special forces team. You know, guys like eventual Commissioner Hoff at the time, I think he was Battalion Chief Hoff. You know, like my dad, Chief Chikorotis, who's the technical director on Chicago Fire now, a bunch of guys like that, you know, the best of the best. And they got them together. I think there were about 15 or so of them, and they sent them out. And as dad tells the story, the Chicago Police Department gave them an escort to the border. Well, somehow the Indiana State Patrol found out about it. So they met them at the border and gave them an escort through Indiana. And then Ohio, they get an escort through Indiana. And his dad said the only state they didn't have a police escort in was Pennsylvania, because they couldn't keep up with them.
Pennsylvania, east to west, is a very long state.
Yeah, but he said the police escort was going so fast, their vehicles couldn't keep up with them. But he said, you know, the drive out there, they would stop for gas, and some of the local gas station franchisees. They gave them, you know, gas cards and said, you know, fill up, it's on us. And even some of the fast food joints, they gave them cards saying, eat on us. But they said everywhere they stopped, they couldn't pay. Either, you know, the gas stations, the restaurants, they just said, no, whatever you need, or bystanders that they were paying. Because they knew where they were headed. And my aunt and uncle, who live in Minnesota, got one of the last rental cars out of Boston to drive home. And they're going like this in the middle of Indiana. And my uncle sees this caravan. And he goes, I bet you Cousin Joe's on there. And sure enough, he was. But, you know, Dad said it was kind of a light, jovial ride out there. And he said, as soon as I hit that George Washington Bridge, I mean, you know it. You're on the rig. You're going to a fire. Things are light. And then you turn that corner. You see the smoke. And, okay, it's go time now. He goes, once I hit that George Washington Bridge, things got serious. And it was serious for the 12 days they were there until they were relieved of their duty.
No, yeah, absolutely. You're right about that. And I think especially for that, you know, tying it back to that game for, you know, the police and the fire, it's, you know, playing bad in that game isn't the worst thing that could happen to you. As,
yeah.
You know, a lot of us know. So we go out there, we just, you know, everyone likes to win. Everyone likes to play well, but
yeah.
You know, you're ready to go at the drop of a hat when you're at work. So if you're not ready to go for something you can prepare for and know exactly when it's starting, you know, you get a little extra things to go on going on there.
Well, the game has definitely taken on new meaning since 9/11 because it always had that charity aspect to it. But there's a little more to it now, you know, and I think the players and the fans, they get that, you know. Yeah, the puck drops and the fans start chanting PD sucks and all that stuff. But it's in good nature because they know it's about something bigger now. It's not just the rivalry. It's beyond that now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Listen, firemen love to drink. So when – and most of them like hockey. So the ones that like hockey and the ones that like to drink is a pretty big group. So –
yeah,
you know, they come down there and they're just there to have another good time. A lot of places make it like a firehouse outing where they go with the tents and everything. They barbecue beforehand and then they go in and they try to drink as much beer as they can.
The action never ends at DraftKings Sportsbook, especially this summer, with tons of ways to bet on all your favorite sports. You can fuel your fandom and feel the heat of the season like never before. Plus, right now, DraftKings Sportsbook is giving new customers a risk-free bet up to $1,000. That's right. Make your first bet up to $1,000, and if it doesn't win, you'll get another shot to cash in. You can throw down on all the major action for baseball, golf, MMA, and more. Plus, with same-game parlays, spreads, money lines, over-unders, and props, your betting options feel endless. As a Cubs fan, it's tough to look at the standings and get too excited. But with DraftKings, I can get excited about every game by placing prop bets. Best of all, DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. You can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code THPN. Make your first deposit and get a risk-free bet up to $1,000. That's promo code THPN only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. Now, I know that, you know, there's the football game, there's baseball, the basketball, there's boxing, but for some reason in New York, the hockey game has taken center stage. You know, do those other sports get, you know, good followings, or is it still just the hockey team just takes the cake?
Listen, all those sports do get good followings, but when it comes down to the game against PD or that big moment at the end of the season, they really don't match us. Like the PD FD baseball team plays, I believe it, Mamamides Park, which is where the Brooklyn Cyclones play,
yeah.
Or, you know, a minor league stadium upstate they'll play in. And PD played FD at MetLife Stadium, I want to say 2 years ago for the 9/11 anniversary. But after that this year, I think they just played in a regular, you know, high school or college field, whereas every year we're playing in an NHL arena, whether it be the Garden, they played at the Barclays a few years ago when they still had hockey going on there, UBS this year. So it's every year after year we sell out that game, and even the 9/11 game, the only reason why it wasn't, you know, packed in there was because of the COVID restrictions that they had, and people just said that they'd rather watch it on TV because they knew it was going to be televised. But technically that game was still sold out because all the tickets from the year before were honored. So it just mattered if you made it or not.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that ESPN aired the September game, and I was able to find the live stream for, you know, the game this fall. And, you know, it was funny watching the ESPN broadcast of it because Buttigieg kept going, "This is not beer league hockey, guys. This is good competitive hockey. You know, it's not NHL or AHL by any means, but this isn't your average beer league game you're watching when you watch this game. There's a lot of talent on both rosters. Guys that did play in the show, guys that played Division I and minor league hockey."
No, absolutely. I think a lot of people, when they come down and they see that game for the first time, they think all they usually hear about are the fights and what it, you know, used to be a few years ago, where it was just, you know, there's some games that it was just a melee the entire time. So, you know, when they come down, they see us actually playing, you know, decent hockey, you know, so I'd say somewhere around, you know, the college level of hockey, it changes everything, and, you know, they get invested in the game. It's definitely not a bad game to watch, and if you're looking to watch a decent hockey.
Well, and as was pointed out in the documentary Rivalry City, the fight at Nassau Coliseum kind of added another layer to the game, and another reason why it's a sellout, because people are waiting to see another bench clearing brawl.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That game is very, that game has the potential to get out of hand, and it did that year. So a lot of people will come just for the fact that the selling point is, oh, they're going to, you know, kick the crap out of each other. So you should, you know, it's going to be a good time. And then, you know, whether they like it or not, they're going to see a decent hockey game instead nowadays, I think.
Yeah.
Especially if the game stays tight like it was this past year. I don't remember if there was a year without any fights at all like this year, just because nobody wanted to give an inch because it was so close. You know, a high scoring game is a little bit easier, a little bit more wide open. You know, you might get one back, but if you don't know if you're going to score another one or not, you might not want to take yourself off the ice for 5 minutes.
That's what I was just going to say too, is you and Brandon played phenomenal in the game. I mean, you guys made some huge saves, and, you know, as the commentators point out, it's usually a higher scoring game, but, you know, it was a 2-1 overtime game. So, you know, kudos to the both of you for coming out in your first, you know, go at the rivalry game and just standing on your heads. It was almost a shame somebody had to lose, but at least it was the Cops, right?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I've been on the wrong end of several games where you came out a loss, but, you know, you were happy with how you played. However that happened, as long as, you know, if we had lost that game, as long as the goal I gave up in overtime wasn't a bad one, I don't know if I would have been able to, you know, hang my head low. But he played great, and, you know, hopefully, you know, him and I are both on the younger end, so hopefully we can keep this going for, you know, another 10-plus years if we're lucky.
Yeah, I have a feeling there's going to be a few more matchups between the two of you. That's for sure. So being mindful of time, I like to end every episode with a list of 10 rapid fire questions. They're the same questions I've asked every single guest. So that's the fun part. You know, if you go back and listen to ones with youth goalies I've had to NHL goalies, they're all the same questions. And the first one is, what's the craziest coaching moment from your playing days?
Oh, what a coach did to me?
Oh, well, just a coach, anything that happened, you know, it could have been an opposing coach just kind of losing his cool. You know, I think of, I went to a Hawks Panthers game when Mike Keenan was the coach of the Panthers, and he did not like a call, and he starts throwing sticks at the refs and everything else. How he didn't get kicked out that game, I don't know.
Well, I'll go with this one. I had a coach when I played in Brooklyn that, You know, he really didn't, you know, talk to the goalies much. It was, you know, if you saved the puck, you did your job. If you didn't, you didn't. So we, I got pulled one game. You know, I maybe I wasn't playing that well, but, you know, it wasn't a good game for the team overall. And I was getting pulled. And as I came on to the bench, he made a comment to me. He said, you know, got to be better than that or something like that. It felt like it was almost rubbing salt in the already open wound of getting pulled in a game. And him and I, this is, you know, I was 20 years old. You know, yeah. He's that type of guy that he wants you to come back at him. He wants to see the fire in you. And, you know, him and I were in a screaming match on the bench in the middle of Connecticut somewhere. And, and you know, we went back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And eventually I sat down and I don't think we talked for like 3 weeks. I still played every game. You know, I was still the starter, but it was funny how he just wanted to see something. He said that to me just to see something out of me, I think. He wanted to, you know, see if I was just going to take it or if I was going to, you know, show I cared. And, you know, I think we should probably should have talked within the 3 weeks, but he was that type of coach where he was like, all right, now I know what I have. So
yeah, he knows how far he can push you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he expected me to explode like I did, and I probably shouldn't have, but
yeah,
it's all in the past now.
Sometimes you got to do that. I even think as players, you got to know your coaches and which ones you can push back at and which ones you can't, you know. I never got into the shouting matches with coaches, but there were a few where I wouldn't question their authority, but I would push back and let them know I was not happy with their decision. And, you know, I think, like you said, it earns a little bit of their respect because they know there's a little more fire in there than maybe they anticipated.
Yeah, he was a coach that he would walk through the locker room to his office and, you know, he might not even say anything to anybody. He might just, you know, just keep walking. And it was just a different thing. He knew what he could get out of guys. And, you know, if you wanted to get a fire in somebody's belly, you knew how to do it. So,
yeah. So the next question, what's your favorite all-time goalie mask?
Oh, favorite all-time goalie mask. I got to say it has to be the Richter with the Liberty on the top.
Such a great mask.
They actually made me one for this game. One of the foundations made me one and it didn't fit. I have it in my bag right behind me here. It didn't fit. I wore it, I think, for a practice and a half, and it was just crushing my head. I was just getting a headache every time. So, unfortunately, I didn't wear it, but I still have it. So,
yeah, so, you know, something to put on display in the house one of these days.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been, honestly, I should take it out of my bag. It's just been in my bag in the case for 6-7 months now, and it hasn't been put on my head. But, I'd like to do something with it for the, you know, the foundation that was giving it to me, maybe auction it off or something like that, which they did 2 years ago for the PD, the 20th anniversary game. So
yeah,
if we could do something like that, that would be good. I'm just trying to get the authentic hockey smell on it by leaving it in the bag.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, that Richter mask, you know, what I loved about so many of those goalies of that era is, you know, Richter's mask changed little bits here and there, but for the most part, it was the same, his whole career with the Rangers. And you don't see that with a lot of guys anymore. You know, they're if they're not changing it up every season, they're changing it up several times throughout the season. But you know, you had guys like Potvin who kept the same thing their entire career. Belfour, it modified over the years, but it was the same look, and they just don't have that these days.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, now I you know, they have the money, the technology, and
yeah,
they can, you know, make 10 different masks with 10 different designs. But I think that is probably one of the cooler things, is it was the exact same for the whole career. You saw that mask, you knew who it was.
Yeah.
You know, I really can't tell you what's on Igor Shesterkin's mask right now, but I can tell you what was on Richter's 20 years ago.
Well, even Van Beesbrucks when he was in New York, and you know, so many of them. That's one of the things I loved about Corey Crawford, is he changed it probably 3 or 4 times, but he kept the same look to his mask year to year.
I lose your mic again.
I plugged it back in. I got to stop hitting the thing. When I move my arms, I bounce the mic and the cord pops out. But yeah, Crawford, he had the same mask for a while, and it was just kind of nice to see. And it was a simple mask with, you know, detail close up, but for the most part, you could see, figure it out from far away. So the next question, what's your favorite rink that you've played at?
Oof. Like home rink or just rink I've played at ever?
Any rink in general.
I mean, yeah, it's hard not to go with, you know, the UBS Arena. I mean, it's a famous rink. But if we're talking about, you know, outside of that, my favorite rink to play at was my home rink in Helena, Helena Ice Arena. That rink was, you know, was loud. It was, you know, we always had, you know, at least 1,500 to 2,000 fans every game. And that was packing the barn. So
yeah,
it was a lot of fun to play there. That was, you know, that was home ice. That was, you had a huge, huge, huge advantage when you played at home there.
Yeah. It's funny on how even some of the smaller rinks, when you get that place packed, it feels a lot bigger than it really is.
Well, I was going to say this before, because, you know, thinking about all the, you know, 18,000 people in that thing, it just sounds like a roar. You really don't hear what people are saying. It's just, you know, there's a lot of people there. Like when we, when I played there or played it when I was in Montana, but we played the Vail Yeti, which is a semi-pro team in Vail, Colorado. We went to see them twice this year, and they, you know, they maybe put like 1,600, 1,700 people in the stands, but they have like a railing right above the goalies. Well, as like right above over the glass, so the puck can pop out and go straight up. And when somebody's like talking down on you in a rink like that, you can hear every single word that they are saying to you. So I feel like that's a little bit tougher when somebody's actually, you know, you can hear everything they're saying. It's very hard to tooting somebody that out that's yelling at you from 10 feet away. But there's too many people in a rink like UBS where it's, you really can't hear or see really many faces in the crowd. It's just, you know, there's a crowd.
Not only that, the glass in the NHL rinks is so much taller that when you are on the ice, you're kind of shielded from anything. Like you said, it's just more of a roar that you hear coming over. You're not hearing the direct insults of the person banging on the glass. Exactly. But when you're in those smaller rinks, you can hear every last insult they're hurling your way, and it's fun.
It is fun. I will agree with that.
So what is your favorite stick that you've ever used?
I used to cut my sticks like Henrik Lundqvist cut his sticks or Dominic Hasek cut his sticks. So I was using foam core up to this year. This year I have the Warrior, I actually have here, Warrior SR2, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I gotta say, I love those sticks, but I don't know if you ever heard of Twigs.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that used to be like the Goalie Monkeys brand of sticks.
Yeah.
I was buying those sticks hand over fist. I love those sticks. I wish they still made them. If they still made them, if they still made foam core, I probably would be cutting my sticks like I did, but I had to make the adjustment because they just don't sell them anymore.
Yeah, well, no, they're hard to come by.
Yeah, they're hard to come by, and they're also, you know, when they're not being made anymore, the quality of them has dipped.
Yeah, so when this last season started, I was due for a new stick, and I'm a foam core holdout, and I got a new set of Vaughn pads this last summer. So I was like looking around, and I saw a Keith Kincaid Vaughn foam core stick that matched my pads. I was like, all right, there we go. It's the right height. We'll go with it. And that was on Pro Stock Hockey, I think it was. I think it was. I forget which one. But, yeah, it was one of those. It's like, all right, so I'm kind of liking that Vaughn foam core, so hopefully I can find a few more when this one starts to die out or breaks. Hopefully neither of those happen anytime soon.
Yeah, I bought two of those Warrior sticks, and I'm not the type to rotate my sticks. I use one stick at practice and go in games and to completion when it breaks, and then same. I go to the other one. So I'm still using that, the first one. The other one pretty much hasn't been touched. It's been coming with me everywhere. So,
yep, I'm the same. Even in college when we got sticks pretty cheap, it was I go with one stick until it's dead, and then I pull the next one up in the stick rack.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was always bring two sticks out to the bench for home games, and I'd bring a third stick on the road with me just in case shit hit the fan.
Yeah, I was never big into buying the newest, most expensive gear because when I first started, the gear I was using was out of the donation bin or from playing again hot sports. And even I have the Warrior right now. I have the Warrior GTs
mm-hmm.
now, like one of the newer Warrior pads now. But up until then, I was always buying, like, I knew I had to get a pro pad because of all the playing I was having for juniors. But I was always look for the model 2 years or a year before that because there really isn't that much of a difference. It's just they want to get them off their shelves.
Yeah.
So 2 out of the 3 years I played juniors, including my last year, I was using Reebok XLTs. I found 2 pairs of them back-to-back years. And those are heavy pads compared to the Warriors are like feathers compared to those pads. But you know, those were $1,600 pads, and they were half off because they were trying to, you know, get rid of them, and they were half off again because they had them in store. They wanted to get them off the shelf.
Yeah.
So I bought a pair of pro pads for $400 and used them for the whole season. It's fantastic.
I was always
a bargain hunter.
I started out using, you know, whatever association equipment they had, and I shoveled driveways and sidewalks when I was a kid. Because we had a lot of old people on our block. So I would save up my money and I'd go buy a piece of equipment here and there. And, you know, and when I was in high school, I had senior level equipment. But when I went to college, he's like, all right, now is the time to upgrade. And so I worked our summer hockey camp going into my freshman year. And I forget how much we got each week. But by the time I came back, I was able to buy myself a pro level set of leg pads. And then I saved up a little money throughout the school year. And during the season, I got the gloves to match with it. And that was back in 1999. And I finally replaced them this year. So, yeah, well, they were heavy, awesome. But boy, did they last. They were a good set. That's for sure.
I was always.
So the next question, what's your favorite? Go on.
No, you go ahead. You're good.
Oh, no, you go on. Because I was just going to move to the next question. So. Have at it.
Yeah, I was always blessed with pads because my goalie coach, he was the type to come out with his pads on. His name was Mike McDonald. He was a great, great goalie coach. He really helped me get where I needed to be. I wanted to shout him out as well as my goalie coach in Montana, Brandon Venata. He was, you know, him and I talked to both of them just as much this day, even though I don't skate with them anymore. But
yeah,
I always had good pads because him and I were the same height.
Nice.
You know, 5'10", 5'9", 5'10", and he would get a pair of pads, wear them for 6 months coaching, and that was his job, was to coach hockey. So he would be like, all right, it's time to get a new set. So yeah. I would always be one of the guys offered to get his old set. So he would usually mark them down pretty significantly for me.
Nice.
So I just wanted to give them a quick shout-out because they were huge for my development as a goalie, those two.
Yeah, it's always fun to look back and see, you know, those people that helped influence you, get you to where you are today. And some of them were goalie coaches, others were just, you know, that person that Kenny gave, that coach that gave you that leash to develop, didn't matter how you were playing.
Mm-hmm. I used to be doing 2-pad stacks, and then I saw one of these guys like, yeah, we're not going to do that anymore. I know, it's dying. I still pull it out every once in a while.
Yeah, I was going to say, I still do it, and it's funny because it catches guys off off guard, but that's how I learned how to play, and now I've been playing in my league long enough, they know it's coming, so luckily I'm very flexible, so I don't know if I'm going to stack the pads or come across in the splits, because thank God I'm so flexible.
Yeah, I think the poke check is a very underutilized tool these days as well because no one expects the poke check, especially, you know, I'm a regular stance goalie, lefty coming backhand to forehand across. That's an easy one.
Yeah, yeah. For me, whenever there's a breakaway and they're coming from my glove side, and I know I like to come out a little bit further so that I stack the pads and poke check out, and 9 out of 10 times they tumble over me and don't get a shot off or anything else. I was playing in a league for 3M right before COVID, and I did that. The guy went over me, goes sliding into the boards. Not a penalty if you watch it, because I touched the puck first and everything. He jumped over me, and the ref awarded a penalty shot. And I looked at him, and I go, why? And he goes, he kind of went into the boards a little hard. And I go, not my fault. Like, it's not a penalty, yet alone a penalty shot. And I stopped the penalty shot, but I was like, are you kidding me? That's not a penalty. And so when I think of penalties I've had called against me, I don't include that one because it wasn't really a penalty.
No, absolutely.
So what's your favorite youth hockey memory?
I really didn't play that much youth hockey. I was just right into high school, so
that counts.
Yeah, all right. Okay, I count the high school. When I was a sophomore, I mean, we weren't really a powerhouse hockey school. When I was a sophomore, our JV made it to the city finals, which is the team I was on, and we had 8 guys, including myself. So we had 5 guys out there, me and 2 guys on the bench, and we beat a couple of high end powerhouse schools. We beat Chaminade and St. Anthony's, which is like the 2, top, schools for, our league. We ended up losing in the finals, but they, did something in the paper on us, like Army of 8 and stuff like that. So,
nice.
I still have a wooden, one of my good friends on the team, his dad made us all wooden 8s painted in our colors. And it was like, he drew puzzle pieces on it, had everybody's name and number on it. And I still have that to this day. They called us the Army of 8, and it was a really fun experience. We really thought we can go all the way, but we ended up losing in the finals.
Well,
a group of guys, a group of 25 guys.
You did get all the way. You just didn't win that last game, so that's pretty cool.
Yes.
So this is a question that kind of goes back to what you're talking. For those smaller arenas when they're packed, what's the best chirp you've heard on the ice, off the ice, directed at you, not directed at you? Best chirp.
Wow. Well, it's actually funny where so we get new jerseys every like 2 or 3 years, the fire department. Now we have the red ones that you saw on the September 11th, and the white ones that we wore this game were the first time we wore them. So before that, this whole season, I've been using somebody else's jerseys that weren't there. So when we were playing in Vail, they were heckling me, and they were like, looking up our roster online and, trying to look it up my number, and I looked up a guy that wasn't on the team anymore because obviously I was wearing his jersey, and they found his Instagram. I mean, they were talking about his mom, his sister, everything. They were letting it fly, and I was just dying laughing because they weren't even talking about me. And they had like an after party afterwards, and I ran into that guy that was heckling me because I remember him. We drank with him the year before too, and I was like, "Hey, I gotta tell you, that's not me. You've been talking a lot about a guy that isn't even on this team anymore." And then the next night when we played them, they made sure they got it right, but I just had to tell them. It was very funny because just hearing them, they were yelling, "Kenny!" Just yelling at this guy, Kenny. And it was just foul stuff they were saying about him, and I just couldn't do nothing but laugh.
When you got back, did you share some of the foul stuff they said about Kenny with him?
I sure did. he said, "Well, thank God I wasn't there on the bench watching, because that would have been horrible." But I'm not like that. I think the chirps are funny. I think they're great. Is there a line, is there really a line that you can cross? Yes, but it's very far away from me. You need to really, really hit home pretty hard.
It's all how you respond to it. And when they start getting to that line, you tune it out. And when you don't respond to them, it shuts them up eventually.
Yeah. Or you got to come back harder.
Yeah.
And beat them down. But
yeah. And I mean, when they're funny about it, and you start laughing, they keep going, but hey, if they're going to be funny, I'm all for it.
Stays lighthearted, yeah. Once it gets a little malicious, then it could have a chance to go bad.
Yeah. So what is the worst post-game beer you've had?
Worst post-game beer? I have to tell you that after the UBS, I mean, like, I was I was very tired after that game. I was having drinks, but I was definitely if you told me the party was over and it was time to go to bed, I would have been like, all right, you got it. I was shot. I really don't have that much experience on post-game beers because I'm only 23. But in juniors, obviously, post-game beers are frowned upon in locker rooms.
I was going to say, you played junior hockey in Montana. Now I know you're telling it.
I mean, listen, post-game party is different than a post-game locker room beer.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, yeah, especially when we were in Vail, that altitude crushes you.
Yeah.
I remember we were up, 5-2, and, it was just penalty after penalty after penalty, and I was just like, this game needs to be over with. Like, last 8 minutes of the game, I was just – it felt like it was, a basketball game where it was just fouling at every time, and, the game took an extra 40 minutes to the last 8 minutes of the game. It was crazy.
Yep.
But I was definitely very, very exhausted after those games at altitude.
Yeah, altitude will do that. I've been to Denver once, and I remember that day we flew in. It kicked my butt. I didn't think it would be that bad, but yeah, it got to me.
And yeah, we had the guys with the oxygen cans in the locker room and on the bench just taking a hit of oxygen.
Yeah. Funny.
Fun trips.
So when you tape your stick, do you go heel to toe or toe to heel?
I go toe to heel.
All right. You're in the minority, but just like Brandon, is there a reason you go toe to heel?
No, I go all the way around, so I cover the heel,
mm-hmm.
But that's just the way I always did it. I started doing it like that. I only changed my tape up one time, and I did it for like 3 weeks. I did just, the Carey Price, just the end to the middle, and, the heel completely exposed, but those foam core sticks, and when you don't use a brand new stick every time, they get kind of beat up without the tape, so.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I hear that. It's funny because I asked that question, and that can be a polarizing question for some goalies, depending on which way you go. So what's your favorite number to wear and why?
Well, right now I have a very weird number, as you probably know. I wear 00 right now, and I'm sticking with that. I think that's the number I'm going to be with for the rest of my fire department career. But I was playing high school and everything. I wore 35 for, Richter. And then when I went to juniors, I was going to take 30 for Lundqvist, but somebody had it. So I went with 33 for Patrick Waugh. And when I was done with juniors, when I was going to college, I was like, I got to change my number again. And I asked the college coach, because this was the summer before I didn't end up going to school, but I said, can I wear 00? He said, absolutely not. You can't wear 00. And I was like, okay, all right. And then, I looked at the numbers. I forget what I ended up telling them, but I think like there was a number in the 70s in there. It was going crazy. But when I was asked what I wanted for the jersey from 9/11, I said 00. And I said, are you sure? And I said, absolutely 00. So my dad wore 00 growing up, basketball, baseball, hockey. And my dad wore 00. So did John Davidson. So did Marty Viron. And also, you can't wear 00 in the NHL anymore. You really don't see a 00. So I said, why not, be odd about it and, let it rock. Some guys think that it's a real dusty number, and some guys think it's cool, but doesn't matter. I think I like it. My dad was happy when I told him I was wearing 00.
Yeah, for me, it's, what's the story behind it? I like to find out the story behind why guys might have a goofy number. And 00, when I saw it, I was like, it's New York, John Davidson. It makes sense.
Yes, it was mostly for my dad because, whatever, he did a lot, for me growing up to be able to play hockey and, a lot of sacrifice, helping buy the gear or buying the gear until I got to a certain age. But no, I thought it was, I thought it would be cool to, give that back to him a little bit. And then, if anybody thinks that that's not cool, John Davidson wore it.
Yeah, exactly. but the fact that it's got the connection to your dad, I mean, that right there makes it cool.
Yeah, it definitely does look weird when you see it on a jersey, but
yeah,
I think it's all right.
You're starting to see it a little more in basketball, although basketball, you're starting to see just the single zero, which to me, if you're going to go zero, I think you got to go 00. You can't just go with the single.
Yeah, I mean, that's funny. Single zero, double zero, but it's all the same number. It's a number that doesn't exist. So technically, if you look in the NHL, you can only wear one, two.
Yeah,
you know, the certain number. There's no zero.
Yeah,
zero
and there's doesn't exist to them. There's no good reason as to why they did away with zero and double zero.
Well, the league especially changed with the numbers. Like, it was Vasilevsky wearing 88.
Yeah.
And Hopi was wearing 70. Yeah, he was wearing 70-something, or maybe he was just wearing 70. But then I look at Vasilevsky, and I see 88. I was like, that looks weird, but, you know, it also looks cool. So double zero is kind of close to that.
Yeah, I like it. So last question. What advice do you have for young goalies?
Don't take everything so seriously. Everything's going to work out in the end. You got to keep working hard. You know, if you want to get to a goal, if you keep working hard, you'll reach it. But don't take your failures too seriously, because hockey's a game of failure.
Yep.
So you can't be perfect in net, and you know, you just gotta do whatever you can, learn from every situation, and make sure you're having fun. Because when you stop having fun, it becomes work.
Yep. Yeah. Life is about more than just hockey. So just remember, it's a game.
Yeah. Absolutely, it's a game.
Yeah. Well, awesome, Nick. It's been fun chatting with you, getting to know you. I'm sure we'll keep in touch going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully you can have me and Bassett back on after next year, and hopefully it's the exact same outcome for us.
Yeah, that's for everybody who is connected to the fire department, that's always the hope. But, you know, if the fire department can't win it, at least the cops can.
I guess that's not the worst thing, but.
Yeah.
We're
yeah.
Hopefully.
It is, you know, as long as you guys raise a ton of money for the foundations, that's all that matters, right?
Yes, that is all that matters. Absolutely. Yeah. That's what it started with. Hold on, yeah. I'm on the phone. Hold on. My grandmother just give me one. I'm going in a second. Oh, you better go to mom. I'm going to come out in a minute, and I'm going to talk to you. Oh, okay. Okay, thank you. I'm sorry. My she's I saw her open the door. I was like, "No." She's 87.
Oh, no worries. Hey, you always got to be kind to grandma when she's trying to talk to you. You know, you got to cherish those moments. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, well, Nick, thank you. You go talk to grandma and have a great rest of your evening.
I will. Thank you. Appreciate it. We'll stay in touch, and hopefully we can come back on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm just good. There we go. I'm going to end that so I don't have. It was fun talking to Nick. For anyone who hasn't watched the FDNY-NYPD rivalry game, do yourself a favor and look up the documentary Rivalry City on YouTube. It's worth the watch. It was released in 2018, but tells the history of the game and shows the intensity of it as well. As has been mentioned in the last two episodes, it's not your average beer league game either. Like Nick said, it's like watching a really good hockey game. That's the skill level of these players. Be sure to follow Nick on Instagram at Nick_TAGZ00. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube simply by searching for Washed Up Goalie. Visit washedupgoalie.com for some great hockey-related content, my beer league hockey video highlights, and of course, all podcast episodes. If you want some Washed Up Goalie or Tendy Talk apparel, be sure to visit my Threadless shop by clicking the merchandise link on the website. If you like this podcast, go listen to the BLPA Big Show. It's the OG BLPA podcast network show where a couple of beer league players talk beer league hockey, draft experience shenanigans, and exploits from around the game. Be sure to check out the full lineup of hockey-related podcasts on the Hockey Podcast Network as well. There are too many lists here, but shows like the Bob Matthews Podcast, the Skates and Plates Podcast, and the Fourth Line Voice Podcast can all be found. If you're looking for something good to read, get yourself a subscription to the Vintage Tendy Magazine. Published quarterly, the magazine takes a deep dive into an 80s/90s era goalie. And in the first five issues alone, they've covered Felix Potvin, Grant Fuhr, Tim Shovelday, Jocelyn Thibault, Ken Reggett, John Van Beesbrook, and episode 20 guest, mask painter Don Strauss. As I do every episode, I want to thank the band The Zambonis for allowing me to use their music. You can download their music on iTunes or listen wherever you stream your music from.
I'm always working on lining up other goalies to talk to. If you are a goalie or have connections to a goalie who I should talk to, shoot me an email at washupgoalie39@gmail.com or send me a DM on social media. And let's not forget, if you're a brand who wants to sponsor the show, be sure to reach out. I'd be happy to talk. And finally, if you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe, rate, and comment on the podcast platform you're listening on. It's a quick action on your part that helps others find Tendy Talk. So, until next time, keep your stick on the ice and your body square to the puck.
Good news.
Well, Dave.